This is the Orange Podcast, conversations with Orange City Council for the local community.
Beaming in from a node near you, you've tuned in to the Orange Podcast as we find out more about the stories behind the headlines at Orange City Council. This is Alan Reader. Orange has a reputation for its festivals. Each year we celebrate our local food and wine culture with Food Week and a wine festival, times that bring us together to enjoy the best of what we're good at. This week we've launched our latest festival. It's a Rainbow Festival to celebrate local residents who can still feel excluded and on the edge.
And as a gay man myself, a member of that community, I do have, I suppose, some insight and understanding into the challenges that particularly our youth face. There is still discrimination and bullying. So an event like this really sends out the message loud and clear. You are normal. You are loved. You are part of this community.
More from New South Wales parliamentarian Dubbo's Stephen Lawrence later in the show. But first, the City of Orange has been a pioneer when it comes to stuff like stormwater harvesting and regional art galleries. And in the coming weeks, an anniversary will be highlighted to mark 10 years since another breakthrough move. A decade since Orange became one of the first places in country New South Wales to let residents recycle their kitchen and garden waste to produce thousands of tonnes of compost. First up today, 10 years of green knitted bins, and the latest tweak we've all got to learn to keep using them. You're listening to the Orange Podcast. If you've lived in Orange for more than 10 years, if you were living in Orange in 2013, you would have been here at a time when these strange things used to appear out the front of houses that had green lids, rubbish bins instead of the regular red one. We now had green lids. And how do they work? 10 years later, it's a success story for Orange that we've led the way. To find out some more about that journey with green lidded bins, FOGO, Food and Garden Organics is the technical term, but FOGO, Joe Smith from Envirocon. Joe, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Alan.
It's been 10 years. Was Orange one of the first?
Was actually, the first regional council to adopt a FOGO service. I think Penrith was the first in New South Wales. They beat us to it, but Orange was closely following behind with the FOGO coming in 2013.
It's been so important, all that stuff that we could get some value out of. We've been good with paper and glass, recycling that, but all that stuff that's about, you know, food, garden waste, that's all able to be turned into something else, and this green lid gave us the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, it's amazing, really. So much better than putting everything into landfill, you know, letting that build up methane in the landfill is such a terrible thing. So being able to withdraw that material and keep all those food waste and garden waste products out of the landfill and put them in your green bin, get them turned into compost, it's really going to save our space in the landfill and save on methane emissions too.
It's been a great idea for 10 years. Are we getting better at it? You guys do surveys and audits every now and again. Are we getting better at it?
We're getting better, but I would love to see more improvement. At this point, it's somewhere between 8% and 25% of all the food waste in Orange residents' houses are actually ending up in the green bin. So a lot of that, the massive proportion of it, is still ending up in landfill. So we've got to be a little bit better with our sorting, getting that food waste into the green bin rather than in the red bin. I know it's a hard habit to break, but it's really important to do, and it's going to save space in our bins as well. So it's definitely worth doing and changing those habits if we can.
Envirocon does a great job with coming up with those educational resources and campaigns to do that. But like you said, it's a tough thing. Old habits die hard.
They do.
You know, when you're chopping the veggies, remembering to put them there and not there. It's a real household chore that you want people to take on for a worthy cause.
Absolutely, yeah. And I know it is a tricky habit, and especially with those smelly things, like you've got mouldy food and meat and bones and things, you don't really think to put it into a different bin. It always tends to end up in the rubbish. So one of those things, we've got to change our mindset and put them in the green one.
So a lot of the message has got through. One of the complicating factors in there is, you know, because this system has been going for 10 years, various layers of government gets involved and then they change the rules. They don't change them completely, but they tweak them. So what happened last year, the environmental authorities decided that for all sorts of really good reasons, little bits of paper that used to be able to go in things like, you know, dirty pizza boxes and that sort of stuff, now can't go in your green bin anymore. Tell me some more about how that happened.
Yeah, so the EPA EPA decided that the presence of PFAS, which is polyfluoroalkyl substances, basically it's a forever chemical and it's found in paper. So it persists forever in our bodies, in the soil, in the water, and it is also present in a lot of paper packaging. So what they wanted to do was to say, well, we don't want paper in the FOGA bin because we don't want that paper and that chemical to persist in the compost product, which is made from our green lid bins. So that means we have to keep paper out on a much bigger level than before. So for a long time, we were saying, yep, put your pizza boxes in the green bin, put your tissues, your serviettes, dirty paper, all good to go in the green bin. Now we've had to change our messaging because the EPA has said everyone in New South Wales, all those councils have to change and keep the paper out of the FOGO. The only paper that they're allowing in there is a little bit just to cover your food waste. So if you're wrapping your food waste in paper, like newspaper or a serviette, that's fine, as long as it's just to carry your food waste in there and to transport that to your bin. We don't want the green bin to become a secondary recycling bin full of clean paper and cardboard. That's not the plan. Like, that's not going to help the compost. We want the food waste in there. That's more important. So if we can put those pizza boxes, and even with a little bit of cheese or oil, pizza boxes are fine to go in recycling. And things like tissues and serviettes that might have previously been going in your green bin, they just have to go into the landfill now, into your red lid bin. Or if you have a compost or a worm farm at home, they'll love that. So it's a good way of keeping them out of landfill if you've got one of those systems running too.
It's frustrating. Just when you've got people heading in the right direction.
I know, we have to change everything.
Done all these educational campaigns. The big picture, it's not a major change. The big picture is all still the same. One of the lines you have that is, if it grows...
If it grows, it goes.
That's it. If it grows, it goes in the green bin. That's a good line. Paper sort of grew a long time ago in a tree. So, you know, if it hasn't grown recently, put it in the green bin.
Yeah, it's an extra detail to that little line, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so that's good news. So it's working. And if people, there's some serious waste nerds out there who like to spend, that doesn't happen in my place at all. Not at all. No one has fights in my kitchen bench about where things should go in various places of green bins or otherwise. But if you're really after the details, where can you go for that sort of level of detail?
Well, you can always head to the EPA's website if you want to know more about the paper rules. So the EPA FOGO information for households, just Google that and it will come up. Or you can always jump on the Orange City Council website because there's plenty of information about what goes in the bins on there. So it's a good place to start. There's a few resources to download it as well.
I think the big motivator in all this green bin stuff is what happens at the end. Some time ago, we've done some trips out to the place at Eucarina Road that produces industrial quantities of compost. The fact that ends up on farms and in at landscaping places, and it's a brilliant quality. I mean, that's what you're making with your green bin.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah, I love to see it. So if we use our green bins properly, fill them with food waste and garden waste, that gets turned into commercial compost through a commercial composting facility out in Molong. And I, even myself, I've got that compost back from there and I've bought it and put it on my garden and my tomatoes are going insane. So
it
definitely works. It's great quality and it's really affordable as well. So it's a nice way of giving back to residents to get some really affordable compost for their gardens as well. So it's a nice little closed loop, which is happening locally too. So we love that.
10 years of having a green bin and using food and garden waste in there. We're still learning, but we're getting there slowly. Jo Smith, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
There was a very colourful event in Orange this week to launch the latest in our city's suite of festivals. It's another chance for fun, but there's also a serious side to the event. The Rainbow Festival will be completely funded by a grant from the New South Wales Government. So Upper House MP and Dubbo local Stephen Lawrence was there from the event. I caught up with him, two council members and one young woman who's very much looking forward to the event.
It's a real pleasure to be here on behalf of the state government. The state government, through our regional youth fund, has contributed $126,000 for this rainbow event. And it's going to be a great event. I'd like to acknowledge everyone here, especially all our community members, our councillors, the staff of council, and everybody else. I've had a look at the event program. It looks like a lot of fun. I probably won't make the disco, but certainly very interested in the street event, the street parade. I think that would be a very suitable event for me, not really being a disco person myself. Look, it will be a lot of fun for the community. and that's a really important part of it. But there is, I suppose, a more serious part to an event like this. This is very much about our LGBTIQ plus community, very much about our rainbow youth, our rainbow families. And as a gay man myself, a member of that community, I do have, I suppose, some insight and understanding into the challenges that particularly our youth face. There is still discrimination and bullying and a whole lot of issues. And as Mel said earlier, our LGBTIQ plus youth struggle with higher rates of mental illness, higher rates of suicide, and a whole range of issues. So an event like this really sends out the message loud and clear: you are normal, you are loved, you are part of this community, you are celebrated by all levels of government, you are part of the community. And I'm just really happy to be here, to be part of that event, to be helping to spread that message with the councillors that are behind me, and very much look forward to being part of the festival itself. So thank you very much.
Stephen Lawrence, if there was a festival in the place where you grew up, what difference would it have made?
Yeah, look, I think it would have made a huge difference. And I do, when I come to events like this, reflect back on growing up in the 70s and the 80s, I suppose, and the world was very much a different place. Homosexuality was decriminalised in New South Wales, I think, in the early 80s, but that was a staged process, and many law reforms have happened since, and gay marriage only happened very recently. So we as a community are very much still on that journey to acceptance, but the legal framework is one thing, but the community and the social framework, the reality of people's lives, is another thing. It is hard for our gay youth, hard for our queer youth, and as a person in public office, I just always want to take the time to spread that message clearly. You are loved, you are accepted, you are celebrated, and that's why events like this festival are taking place with the support of local and state government.
There are signs of concern about this festival among a small number of community members. What would you say to people opposed to this festival?
Yeah, look, you always have a diversity of views in the community, and I've now been in public life for about 10 years. I was the Mayor of Dubbo, and I think back to interactions I've had with community members, and I think back vividly to one before the first community forum that I was participating in as a candidate, where a fellow said to me, "Is it true that you're living a homosexual lifestyle? I'll be exposing this tonight at the forum." And you just have to keep doing what you're doing, and the problem lies with those people. The problem doesn't lie with our gay kids. The problem doesn't lie with our queer community. The problem lies with those people. And my personal life philosophy with people that espouse discrimination and hatred is I pity them, I feel sorry for them, because I see that most of our community is up with the times. They know that our rainbow community is just a normal part of our community. So that's the positive message that I want to spread.
Orange City Councillor Mel McDonald, why is this Rainbow Festival good for Orange?
I think it's really important that we celebrate diversity and inclusivity in our community, especially of our youth. LGBTQIA plus individuals are at much higher risk of a whole lot of bullying, of mental health issues, discrimination. I think it's just a really great opportunity to celebrate who they are and make sure that the Orange community just embraces them.
How does a festival, a community celebration like this, have an impact on the sort of problems you've talked about?
I think it breaks down some of those, some of that misinformation that might be out there in the community, because often it's that the few noisy people that grab the headlines, but the facts and the truth of it often get lost. So I think it's really important that we break down those barriers.
Orange City Councillor David Mallard, what do you make of this festival? Will it be a good thing for Orange?
Oh, I think it's going to be a fantastic thing for Orange. I think it's really great that we're getting out, we're celebrating together, we're coming together as a community and showing that we are inclusive, we are welcoming, and that young LGBTQI plus kids in our community in particular, they are loved, they are seen, and they are safe.
How does a community celebration translate to kids feeling more comfortable about themselves?
Look, you can't be what you can't see is the saying, and for people to, you know, young people to be struggling with their identity, to be struggling about what they're thinking and feeling, and to not have any role models in the community and not see that they can be a welcomed, safe and loved part of the community, whatever is going on. And we know, as others have already said, that that young rainbow people can often experience a range of mental health challenges and issues because of the discrimination, because of the fear, because of the misinformation that's around. And we need to challenge those that misinformation and stereotypes, and we need to get out and show as a community that we're a welcoming and inclusive community.
Okay, my name is Geordie Thurtell. I am the head of Sincerely Queer, which is a gay youth group here in town that I started with the help of the council. A couple of years ago, I could have never dreamed that I would have been a part of something like this. It's such an inspiring thing. I'm just so happy to be a part of it, and it means so much to me and all the queer people in the community. It's just going to be such, like, because it's going to be so open and out there, and it's just going to say to the community, we know you're here, we know you're queer, and we're excited to invite you in. And that's just so inspiring.
Someone said earlier that you can't be what you can't see. Is it important for you that the Orange community sees the diversity that's here in Orange?
Yes, it is so important that Orange sees, like, the diversity around them, and that people know that there's, like, support groups and medical help and all that stuff here that is safe for LGBTQIA people and youth, that is here in town, so they don't have to go to, like, Sydney to just get the care they need.
What's the best part of the festival that you're looking forward to?
I gotta say the drag trivia, but I'm also really looking forward to having a stall there on behalf of Sincerely Queer. It's gonna be so much fun talking to the community and answering questions, which I'm always open to.
That's Geordie Thurtell. The Orange Rainbow Festival runs across the weekend of 22 to 24 March. You can find out more about the program and ticketing on the Orange City Council website. And that's the Orange Podcast for this week. Remember, you can leave a review of this program wherever you get your podcasts. That can help someone else find this show. And it's always good to hear direct feedback from people listening from all over the planet. You can email us at podcast@orange.nsw.gov.au. That's podcast@orange.nsw.gov.au. The Orange Podcast is produced on Wiradjuri Country. Until next time, this is Alan Reader. Bye for now.